So let's start by taking ourselves down into our spirit home, by making the sound of Om together. We'll first take three mindful breaths. And with a deep in breath. Shanti, shanti, shanti. Satchidananda interprets the Bhagavad Gita as a path for personal spiritual transformation. Our subject is Sri Swami Satchidananda's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. Our primary focus will be on verses with practical spiritual advice. Practical. We've been studying chapter 2 of the Bhagavad Gita, and now we've come to 54, so we're approaching the end. Shall we jump in? Here we go. 54. This is Prince Arjuna talking to Lord Krishna, who is an incarnation of the divine. So Arjuna represents ourselves as spiritual seekers. And here Arjuna says, O Lord, what is the sign of one of steady wisdom who is always in samadhi? Samadhi is a Sanskrit word for super consciousness, a constant state of unity with the divine. Being in that state, what is the sign of one of steady wisdom who is always in samadhi, super consciousness? How does this person talk, walk, and sit? If we were to see a person like this, how would they talk to us? How would they walk? How would they sit like we're sitting today? Here's Satchidananda's commentary. Arjuna is saying, please, just let me know how someone like that will behave in day-to-day affairs. Isn't it a wonderful question? Satchidananda says. We should thank Arjuna for having asked this question. Probably Krishna wouldn't have said all this otherwise. That's why, Satchidananda says, Arjuna is the calf. He goes forward and says, I'm hungry. Like a calf, or in the Christian tradition, like a sheep, perhaps, goes forth and says, I'm hungry. And the cowherd boy, or the shepherd in the Christian tradition, the cowherd boy, Krishna, milks some truth from the Vedas for the sake of Arjuna. The Vedas are the Bible on the Indian subcontinent. It's a great long work, commensurate with our Bible. Milks some truth from the Vedas for the sake of Arjuna. Some spills out and we all enjoy it. These slokas, Satchidananda asserts, are really wonderful. This is the most important and oft-quoted portion of the second chapter, the description of the enlightened one. How does he walk? How does he talk? How does he sit? All right, let's proceed on now with 55, 56, 57, 58, 59. That's five verses, five slokas. We'll look at five slokas, and then we'll look at what Satchidananda has to say about them. 55. He's talking about an enlightened person now. A person who has let go of all personal desires and is utterly content in the truth of the Atman, the true self, we call it Christ consciousness, is one of steady wisdom. A person who has let go of all personal desires and is utterly content in the truth of the Atman, true self. So what would that look like if we let go of personal desires? What's a personal desire that might be part of your way of looking at life? A personal desire. There are group desires. It's a personal, in other words, a desire that's sort of part of your ego. A personal desire. We may not want to admit any personal desires in this communal setting. I remember personal desires I used to have. Personal desires for things. Things. I wanted a car. When I was 15 and a half years old, I had a personal desire for a car. I lived in Los Angeles, and I wanted a car. I saved my money up, and I got a car. It was a personal desire. When I was at work, I remember a young man who worked very hard told me, I want to get rich. I want to be rich. I said, really? I had had some training in prosperity consciousness by then. I said to him, well, how will you know when you're rich? How will you know? I didn't prompt him. I didn't suggest $1 million or $2 million or other things, or health, or relationships. I just asked him, how will you know when you're rich? He couldn't answer me. That's an interesting personal desire, isn't it? A personal desire that's not really able to be fulfilled until it gets more flesh.
So I'm guessing below that personal desire is a peaceful financial well-being.
I don't know. We didn't explore it. I felt there was some money involved. Rich.
But like money being the strategy to meet the universal human needs.
I don't know. I just took him at his word. Now here, the Bhagavad Gita tells us a person who has let go of all personal desires and is utterly content in the truth of the Atman, the true self, is one of steady wisdom. Look at the next verse. A person undisturbed by difficulties, who doesn't yearn to be happy, who has no favorites, no fear, and no anger, is a sage of steady wisdom. You see how the Bhagavad Gita is giving us some practical advice to be in this state. We may have a thought that it's challenging to follow this advice, and here it is. Here we go. A person undisturbed by difficulties. Who among us is undisturbed by difficulties? Who among us from time to time doesn't get upset when things don't go our way? Who among us doesn't get upset if someone looks at us with a critical eye and has an unkind word for us? Who among us? Who among us And I bring forth now issues that relate to myself. I've never been comfortable around anger since I've been a child. I've just never been comfortable around it. I think other people are. My previous wife, my ex-wife, with whom I've quite been friends, seems very comfortable around anger. She grew up in an angry household, and there were a lot of harsh words back and forth, and she was comfortable with that. Now, I wasn't comfortable in our marriage with consciousness in her, and in our marriage we don't really experience anger. But in her new relationship with a man who I like, anger just rises up all the time. She's comfortable with it. She doesn't get upset. So it's not a difficulty for her. A person undisturbed by what shows up as a difficulty. Could be something different for you or me. A person undisturbed by difficulties, who doesn't yearn to be happy. Oh my God, why am I so miserable? Oh, thank God I'm happy today. Who has no yearning to be happy. Who has no favorites. Who treats everything as God does, with benign, loving indifference. That's what no judgment is. No favorites. No fear and no anger. Who among us doesn't have fear about some things? Dying. Fear. How our finances might turn out if we don't do this or that. Who among us doesn't get angry sometimes? We have a kind of anger that some of us approve, righteous anger. You know, I don't like the way the country's being run. I'm really angry about it, and I'm going to do something about it. Angry. Isn't there something about the pursuit of happiness that's embedded in the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution? It's part of how we grew up. And yet here is this other teaching that says, a person undisturbed by difficulties, who doesn't yearn to be happy, rests in that by itself, who has no favorites, no fear, comfortable in all situations, and no anger, is a sage of steady wisdom.
So this is just a self-awareness of when we are in anger, fear, or showing favoritism.
Who doesn't have any? Who's aware you have some and say, that's interesting, I got some. And what is it about myself on my spiritual path that I need to address?
Yeah.
So that this feeling of fear I have, or anger, might soften and eventually dissipate. What is it that I'm not seeing, that if I were to see, would help me pass through this feeling of anger or fear? What is it that I'm not knowing in this moment, that if I were to know it, would help me to rise above any fear or anger that I'm feeling. Even that fear may be in your shoulders, or anger in your fists, in your body. We know that we transform our mind, the mind will transform the body. That's the second one, 56. Here we go, we got five. Done two so far. All right, this is the third one. Whoever is free of all mental attachments, who is not excited when good things happen, nor dejected when evil comes, is poised in wisdom. Can someone give me an example of a mental attachment? Could be yours or someone else's.
I have to have a spouse.
I have to have a spouse. Sounds like a good one. Any others? A mental attachment. has something to do with the mind.
I have to win.
I have to win. I'm always a winner. I have to be a winner. I can't ever lose.
Have to be perfect. Yeah.
I have to be perfect. I'm not perfect, and I have to be perfect. I should be perfect. Mental attachment. Others, those are good. Mental attachment. Mental attachment.
I have to get this thing done. I have to do my errands. I have to do my chores. I have to cook. I have to clean.
Your laundry list. I have a mental attachment to my to-do list. I got to do them all. That's a mental attachment. Good. What's a characteristic of mental attachments? Characteristic.
Anxiety when you're not reaching.
Anxiety.
When you're not reaching your goal.
When you're not.
Be.
Right. Anxiety.
Grasping.
Or?
Grasping.
Grasping. Grasping. Feeling alive. Another attribute of mental attachments, I'll suggest, is repetition. Our mind goes over it again. And again, it's not like it comes up once and you say, oh, no, right? I have to be rich. I have to be perfect. Again and again. So we know what a mental attachment is, and the Gita says, whoever is free of all mental attachments. Free means that we're not encumbered by them or bound by them. We might have them, thank you God, but we're not bound by them. We're free from them. It's just something we have, like an ice cream sundae. Who is not excited when good things happen? That's a big one. I know people who, when good things happen, get very excited when they eat a special meal. They write me an email and tell me it was so good. They're so excited. Not excited when good things happen, nor dejected when evil comes, is poised in wisdom. The Gita recognizes a condition of being human, and that is, if we get excited when good things happen, we are probably setting ourselves up for the other shoe to drop, so that when not good things happen, we become dejected. So to achieve the state of equilibrium, or to be poised in wisdom, the Gita recommends practically that we avoid excitement when good things happen and find ourselves not dejected when evil comes. This doesn't mean that we aren't sociable. We aren't sociable. So if someone has something wonderful happen to them and they are excited, the good Lord didn't send us down here to fix them or teach them how to behave. No. So we can be glad for them to be excited. And we can be glad for them out of our steady wisdom, consciousness. Taking that person into our love, in other words, respecting them for what they are, where they are in their spiritual path. Having a sense of generosity towards them, to be exactly as they are, without change, and accept them exactly as they are. Respect them, sense of generosity, and be compassionate for wherever they are in their spiritual path. Passionate for whatever's going on with that.
So I hear a lot of description about this person who's like close to the Atma or something. So this person is not this, not that. For example, this person doesn't want happiness. This person doesn't have any personal desires. This person doesn't have any attachment. This person is like, whatever happens, he's like, kind of don't care type thing. So this person, anything that happened, this person, like not affected. So my question is I cannot see who this person is, because if
right.
this person doesn't want happiness, doesn't want things, doesn't want to be rich, what, who is this person? I mean, I don't, I cannot, in my mind, I don't know who this person is.
Yes.
Does he live in a mountain somewhere? I don't know.
No, he's among us.
Yeah, like, give me an example of that.
I met Satchitananda.
Huh?
When Satchitananda was alive, I was down in Yogavel, and I met him. He was a man, and when you got around him, there was an energy about this man. I can't explain it. Just an energy that drew people to him. And he just exuded peace and love.
Does he
and
have
I aspired to be like him.
Does he have a job? Does he have a wife or have kids? Or
he has
no.
a job. He's very, very, very busy. His job was to lead the spiritual community and go out into the world and give talks to other people. So he was a very, very busy man. Very busy man. Ministering to people. And I got this feeling about him that he wasn't attached to being happy, therefore he was happy. He didn't pursue happiness or try to be happy. Rather, he pursued being of service to others, and all I observed in him was perfect happiness. Perfect happiness. He didn't get excited when wonderful things happened to the ashram. And he didn't get dejected when things weren't working out well and they had money problems or so on. He was at perfect peace. He knew that Spirit was in charge. And he was at perfect peace with that. So I have known a person like that. Maybe not all of us have. I was blessed. So I can relate to these things. These teachings are teaching us that in order to experience that divine oneness which we were born with, we have to let go and press through a lot of our upbringing and our ways of thinking that are in our minds, how we were brought up, how we learned. Our job is not to know new things, but to unknow things that haven't served us. That's why you'll see that the first steps are to unknow, to unlearn some things that haven't served us well. Yes?
As you're talking, I mean, what's occurring to me is that, you know, what we get to know of people, just in general, we see the ego, we see the mind, we see the obvious things that cause us, that enable us to interact.
Yes.
And what Satchitananda is talking about is really someone who's transparent. Satchitananda was coming totally from spirit. So in a sense, what you're experiencing is spirit, pure spirit, unencumbered by all this that we are encumbered by.
We are.
So it's all about seeing, releasing as much as we can and allowing ourselves to become more transparent to spirit, who sounds like such a...
Yes, he was completely at ease. At ease. Just seemed at ease, no matter who showed up or what was going on. He was at ease.
I have a sense that person is within all of
yeah.
us.
Yes.
And it is a process
yes.
of releasing, which as you're saying, releasing the conditioning. And when it says whoever is free of all mental attachments, I think it's saying who is free of identifying with the mind. And that's a huge task. But most of us probably have experienced that.
Mm-hmm.
But we get drawn back to the identity, to the mind.
Right.
We're all human, and we have human nature. And part of human nature is to experience mental attachments. It's part of us. We're probably not going to get rid of that. The sloka says to be free of them, to let them come and go, and not start latching on to them. We know we're latching on to a mental attachment when we start repeating it to ourselves. We're daydreaming, you're just repeating and repeating and repeating. That's generally a sign of being attached. Okay, we let them come, thank you God, and let them go.
So if your goal is to not attach to anything or not have desire, isn't that a goal in itself? It's like, I try to sleep, but the more I try to sleep, the less I go to sleep.
Yes, same thing. Yes, there's one desire that's recommended, the desire to be free of desire.
Which is also a desire.
Yeah.
That's the conundrum, that's a paradox. Yep. The one desire that is recommended is to be free of desire. Mm-hmm. You got it.
Neat trick if you can do it.
The purpose of spiritual works like this is to plant seeds in us, so that we can look at our life perhaps in a different lens from time to time.
I remember a story, and I don't remember exactly where it is. You'll probably recognize it. It's you have two tigers. Which one's going to win? The one you feed. So if you're constantly focusing on your mind and up here and all this sort of stuff, that's going to grow and get stronger. But if you're feeding your soul, if you pay attention to that growth, that will get stronger.
In the Native American tradition, they're called wolves.
Yeah.
Wolves. Okay, wolves.
One up here,
right.
And another down here.
Yeah.
Which one are you feeding?
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you. I knew I heard that story, but I couldn't quite get it.
Tigers, wolves.
Same thing.
Here we go on. All right, going on. Free of mental attachments. We got them, but we're free from them. Who is not excited when good comes? We notice excitement. We notice it's good. We notice it's the Lord's doing, and we're at peace with it. Not dejected when evil comes. Again, it's the Lord's doing. We accept it with equanimity. This is what life has given us today. All right, moving on. We've done three, two more to go. When one can withdraw the senses from sense objects, like a tortoise draws within, his wisdom is unwavering. For example, we just had a spread out there in the atrium. And I'm guessing that some of our senses, at least my sense, said and salivated a little bit. And our senses wanted to go eat something. Withdrawing from the senses doesn't mean that you don't eat it. It just means that you notice the senses want it. The senses want the food. Ah, I've got a taste sense. Sort of associated with my tongue and my nose. I can smell it. Ah, that's part of my bodily sensations. So can I acknowledge my senses? Thank you, God, for giving me these wonderful senses. And yet act from a deeper place. Is this mine to do? Yeah, I think it's okay to give my senses some food they want, and never mind, they can have it. Or not today, senses. Look, senses, you've already got enough resources. Can you just hold on for a little while, and I'll feed you later? Do you mind? There we go. Can we step back from our senses, like a turtle withdraws within? Wisdom is unwavering. All right, four, one more to go.
That's excellent, thank you. Mm-hmm. I also like the, sometimes there's a a request that I make, or curious questions that I ask myself. What am I yearning for? What am I longing for? It's often not the food. It's maybe I just have a sense of wanting to belong, wanting to, you know, for fun and play, wanting to connect. And it has nothing to do with the food, but we replace it. And then that allows me to become much more self-aware.
What Sam is pointing out is when we have a sensual feeling, the senses want this or that, we can look underneath it and see if there's something else going on that's useful. And perhaps by looking underneath it, we can find the place from which we can let go of that too. I see, I think I want the food because I never got fed when I was a child. He never let me have cake as a child. Only the adults had it, not me. I've always wanted cake. There's a cake. I'm going to eat it. So we could look underneath that yearning and see that it had something to do with something deep underneath. And can we withdraw our senses from that sense object as well?
You know, I have a different interpretation. And I haven't had a lot of experience with this. But when I have experienced it, has been profound. And I'm focusing on the part where it says, withdraw the senses from the object. I've had experiences where I don't feel like it's me going out and seeing an object, but it's coming to me and it's my heart that's sensing.
Mm.
And there's this intimacy.
Mm.
You know, it's this what's within me is within what I'm sensing.
Mm.
It's not an object, we're the same. And I haven't had, like I said, a lot of experience, but it's been quite profound. That's what that means to me.
Well, thank you, Becky. There's a key word here, by the way, the second one, can, meaning is able to, can choose to. It doesn't say we always do it. Rather, we develop the ability to, when we choose, to withdraw the senses. It's just something we can do when we choose, when it's appropriate.
So I wonder if today's lesson can apply to everybody, because I know a lot of people that the main goal is to, like, for example, make money. You know, their being is to, like, make money. You know, so if you take that away from them, they pretty much lose the will to live. And there's no reason to get up in the morning, type of thing. So, you know, so I'm saying, like, how about those people? Like, you know, those people like that. It's like, if you withdraw that, they're like, oh, I don't need to get up anymore.
So let's see if I heard you correctly. So what I heard you say was, there are some people who are really attached to money and getting money, and that's what drives them and motivates them and pushes them out. So if they no longer had that drive, you assert, they would have no motivation to get up in the morning or to participate in life.
Right.
You're guessing.
I mean, from talking with them, you know, from knowing them, I mean, that's all. The impression, that's a very strong impression. And I know a lot of people like that, actually.
So now it comes down to, they've told you that's why I get up in the morning. And if I didn't have that, I would feel lost. Now what it comes down to is, do you really believe they got it when they tell you that? Do you really believe they know themselves so well that that's their ultimate truth? I'm suspicious that they perhaps haven't expanded their consciousness to the point where they realize, wow, it isn't all about money. And this happens to people. This happens to people who spend their whole lives attached to money. And something amazing happens to them. They've just got more than they can use. Now, some go on a coin until they die, but got more than they can use, and they do a flip. they do a flip. They say, wow, now what's mine to do is to give it away. Carnegie built libraries all over the United States after he had spent years of his youth amassing wealth, buying steel factories, and being hard-nosed, hurting other people doing this. Then he's flipped. The Rockefellers, the steel oil barons, their family became great benefactors. So perhaps people that say, oh, I get up for money and that's my whole life, and if I didn't have that urge, I'd give up everything. I'm suspicious that there's some other consciousness awaiting them that they haven't seen yet. So I'm willing to listen to them, and I'm willing to hear them, I'm willing to respect what they have to say. I'm willing to be generous and not try and change their opinion because it's their spiritual life. And I'm willing to be compassionate. That's where they are now. But in my inner heart, I recognize that there's another human condition that they haven't experienced in a while. Maybe they did as a child. And I hold that light for them in my heart. I hold the light for them in my heart. That's what Satchitananda would do if he came across a person like that. Said, look, Satchitananda, I get up for money, I work for money, I kill myself for money, my health is going bad, my marriage is shot, my kids don't like me, but it's all about money, I want more. What would Satchitananda do? I think he would hold him in the light.
It's really all you can do because it's their choice.
Respecting that people make choices and respecting that at any moment in our lives, we can have the most amazing spiritual transformation. Mm-hmm. At any moment. Let's close with the last sloka. That's probably as far as we'll get. We don't have time for the commentary. We can
Steve,
do that
thank you.
Next week. Are you ready for the last one here? Anyone have to leave? It's about 4 minutes to 11. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So we'll do the last sloka, we'll do the commentary next week. It's a lot to digest, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now here he goes about the sense objects. Money is a sense object. You can look at your bank balance. How do you know how much money you have? Well, these days you go online, look at numbers. Either they're blue numbers, ooh, more money, or red numbers, ooh, lost some. So that's how you know about the money.
Or green or red.
So the money, you know about it by looking at it with your eyes and processing with your eyes. See, that's the sense object. By abstaining from sense objects, they will drop away. That's the promise. Longing for them will also disappear upon realizing the highest truth. By abstaining from sense objects, the spiritual scriptures here say they will drop away. It also promises longing for them will also disappear upon the occasion when one, by grace, realizes the highest truth. Maybe we're not living in the highest truth. Maybe we notice others not living in the highest truth. The sloka says, longing for them will also disappear upon realizing the highest truth. We're having great accompaniment from the other room. Any other comments or questions before we close our session today?
I guess just the continuous progress, right? Becoming aware, letting go. Seems like I'm more mature than last year.
I can make copies of these five slokas if you wish. Bring them for you. So if you're interested in a copy of these slokas, let me know.
That'd be great.
And we're ready to close. Any other thing?
Thank you, Steve.
Let's prepare to go deep inside with three mindful breaths. And with a deep in-breath.
Thank you.
Thank you.